This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
When I was asked to speak, I thought, what do I really want to talk about? And I thought, I'm interested in talking about how some of the approaches that are available to us might actually be quite helpful to achieve both empowerment and participation, and also possibly provide quite cost-effective solutions, because the overarching theme, in case we forgot, is consultation in a cold climate. That's not to say what I'm going to talk about. I'm sort of pushing that as that's the solution for everything. Far from it. I think all the kind of approaches we've heard about and we're going to hear about for the afternoon are of importance. So it's not one method beats another. It's not an arm wrestling exercise. But actually it's something about knowing what is best for what kind of purpose. I just want to pick up briefly on the cold climate theme, because we heard this morning, Rian talked about and others, about the kinds of reductions, because my organization does a mix of community engagement, capacity building, evaluation, research, and also organizational development and partnership work. And we're actually involved with quite a few authorities and LSPs on how they deal with the challenge of keeping their engagement, their communications reasonably intact, but taking out something like more like 25% is what we're picking up from the authorities we're working with. So we're doing sort of strategic reviews and working inside the organizations and partnerships on how they can align and make consultation, engagement, empowerment more efficient. So those are some real challenges. I don't know what numbers are in your heads and in your organizations and your LSPs, but I think we're looking at something quite dramatic. What we found in the work that some authorities have started to do and some LSPs have started to do is that the focus is shifting to empowerment, that actually what some of our clients are saying is, we need to bring about behavior change in communities, because that deals with some of the issues that you've heard about this morning, but also in our frontline staff. And actually, just shaving away budgets isn't going to get us there. So we're looking for possibly investing in empowerment and authority, but certainly keeping that element more strongly alive, and possibly avoiding some of the sort of tokenistic consultations, even when they are required by law, but actually we can scale down on that. So the example of town planners and so on chimes very, very, very strongly with what we've been picking up. So I'll talk a little bit about digital and creative media, and it sort of just coincidentally we ended up on creativity before lunch, and we're starting again after lunch as well. I think the kinds of goals that this kind of approach has in mind are, you know, creative digital engagement, they're two slightly different things that can be connected up, should increase participation, so that's one of the goals. It should capture more voice, and, you know, whilst I run surveys and have to run lots of surveys, you don't get a huge sense of voice coming out of surveys. It must have an impact, and I think Ben's point again about impact and action I think is very important. It must lead to improvement. We're not doing this so that we just have an interesting conversation. We're doing this so that public services deliver better outcomes for their local communities. So that's the impact that really matters on this. And as I said, these approaches are supplementary. They often are involved in a part of multi-methods approaches. So it's quite rare that you just go and do a bit of video ethnography on its own. You do a bit of viral marketing, social media work on its own. It is part of other approaches. And most of you will probably agree that actually good engagement doesn't have a single kind of methodology to it. It blends, it tries to meet the right approach for the right audiences. I will argue that actually they can be incredibly effective at addressing social exclusion, and also that they can provide good value for money. Now, I'll whiz through a few case studies just to make it come alive. The Office of Disability Issues runs a very large survey on the experience and expectations of disabled people. It's a big national study. GfK carried out the last wave of it. But what they wanted was a much more direct involvement of disabled people in the design, the kind of progress reporting, the interpretation, and the kind of engaging with decision makers on what is actually coming out of the survey. So we set up a reference network which consisted of national advocacy groups, local disabled people, and we used a number of social and online processes to connect all this up. And the multi-methods element was really important in this, because some people are ready to get involved. Some already are very involved, as you saw from the Ipsos Mori presentation. But some people have lots and lots to say, but haven't been involved and haven't had a channel. So engaging them locally in face-to-face meetings and workshops, and engaging them through an online forum in which they could work and store documents and exchange views, and backing that up also with telephone support, worked incredibly well. And I think it's become, for ODI now, very much a sort of a case study of good practice that can be used in other work as well. This is a bit of work we did under the old mayor of London. Not surprisingly, there was an interest in understanding better what the experiences are of Muslim students in London. And London has a very large number of Muslim students. It's very distributed across lots and lots of higher and further education institutions. There are some connecting threads through mosques and so on, but it's very, very difficult to identify a kind of London-wide representation of Muslim students. Also bear in mind, you've got UK-born Muslims, Muslims from all over the world, and Muslims itself are very fragmented into not just different countries of origins, but variations of faith and so on. So again, using a multi-methods approach, talking through to different faith organizations, obviously the education institutions as well, and then putting a very strong element of viral marketing, and Facebook proved to be the best medium for this. We involved just under 700 Muslim students in this process, and we brought a proportion of those into an open space on the lovely top floor of the GLA building, a sunny day as well. So it sort of felt like it was a good process on all the dimensions. But the viral promotion and the networking element worked, again, incredibly well. Now, obviously, it's an audience which is very IT savvy, and many will use Facebook, but actually the cascading worked not just via Facebook, but also people talking to other people and saying, you should know about this. And we started to get student blogs and other debates going. So I'm focusing on processes, so just to rattle through, to give you a flavour and open up the discussion about later on about communications and involvement in you know, democratic kind of decision-making. Another methodology which is very powerful is video ethnography. How many of you have used video as part of your engagement processes? Yeah, a few of them. Okay, so it'll be interesting to sort of share views on what you found. It often does need some professional input. I mean, film is not as simple as it looks, and particularly the editing is not as simple as it looks. But more important, video ethnography actually is a social research process. It's an ethnographic process where the camera is just one of the kind of key tools of data capture. And what it does very successfully, it gets at layers and layers and layers of insight, because you're spending typically 2 days with the person you're profiling, and that creates an intimacy that you don't get through other processes. Also, you're recording quite a lot, and then you're getting the person to actually interpret what's going on, so you're getting not just your interpretation as a professional video ethnographer, but also the interpretation of the person who's part of the process. And it creates a very powerful tool. So the examples I'm going to show you, the three people who are profiled, and I'm going to show you all of them, we took into a public launch for the National Consumer Council. Somebody might know about this on the panel. And they felt confident not just to talk to a kind of cross-party group, including some ministers, but actually they also gave a presentation on the basis of their experience. So I'm just going to give you a few little snippets.
I'd like to say, don't forget about the smaller communities. Because of the bigger issues of the cities and the crime and such forth, it is so easy to overlook and forget about the smaller rural areas.
It's important for rural communities to survive because you need somebody to look after the area. You need somebody to maintain these beautiful areas for people who do live in the city to come out and see a different way of life. And also, if there wasn't anything in these rural areas, where's everybody going to go from here?
I'm just going to skip by. I'm just going to give you one other example that represents that particular approach.
I mean, every day I eat 8p Tesco value noodles for lunch because it's all I can really afford. And it makes me feel bloated and tired and shit.
Five a day, if you talk about people eating five a day, what's it going to cost them? Because it's not cheap. It's nowhere near. I mean, it's expensive, especially if you've got a family, and also, for me, sometimes I do have to break the rules and have those cheaper meats because I can't always afford the expensive ones. Well, physically, it starts to build my blood count and makes my blood sugar wrong, which, consequently, as I get older, is going to cost them more to look after me.
What you've seen in these snippets, obviously, they are snippets only, and in order to convey something in the short space of time we have, they are quite articulate. I think a lot of the capture is actually seeing people behave, seeing how they interact in their environments with other people, and bringing that alive. The other elements of video work, which again some of you probably have used in your own areas, actually just to give a camera to people and actually let them talk about what matters to them. So we've done that with young people looking at commissioning, and they went out and talked about their experiences, building also a little bit on the example we had from Ealing, that actually that kind of lay inspection, if you like, is a very powerful tool, and actually equipping people with cameras or even just snap cameras brings a lot to life that sometimes, you know, kind of verbally reported processes don't. I want to give another example, which is a piece of work we've done for the Equality and Human Rights Commission on disability hate crime, which is obviously very, very topical at the moment. This was a bit of an experiment for us because we did a traditional piece of qualitative research, so we had audio recordings of interviews and so on, and we thought they're very powerful, these recordings. When you read them, they don't have the same power that we felt when we talked to people directly. So we thought, well, we haven't recorded them, it's just audio, so how about trying to create an animation for this? So we just experimented this, and then because it's a crappy recording, the soundtrack is really poor, but we just wanted to see how it would work, and it's worked incredibly well because we had lots of requests for making this available for training. So a number of police forces and social service and others have requested this, because what it demonstrates really well is, you know, a case study of how what appeared fairly small things and started off with a complaint. This is a mentally a couple, both with mental health problems. Their neighbours started victimising them, but it started on fairly trivial type of things, but it became quite traumatic and damaged that couple's health and general well-being, and no agency picked up on it. So apologies for the soundtrack on this.
We've got a tree that has been there for a long time. It's a very beautiful tree. And the very first thing we started on about was the fact that they felt the tree was going to be a great danger to their son. So when we started on, we wanted the tree chopped down. Yeah. We got lots of nasty letters, which obviously made me very upset. During that period of time, he'd actually thrown the recycling box at the door.
Okay, and I'll give you one last example, which leads into some of the conversation we're going to have in a moment, that actually a lot of what we're trying to do also has to communicate back. So it's not just about feedback, it's about having a real impact on people, not just demonstrating you're listening, but actually sharing the lessons learned. We're doing some work developing what's called Young Muslim Advisors, and they act as a influencing body on central government and locally. And part of that has been to do quite a lot of development work with them, training them in media skills and so on. But they also wanted to tell their own story more effectively. So they wanted to reach out to the wider constituency of young Muslims and find a way of making their work more attractive and engaging people further. So they're involved in another bit of animation, which our partner, Bold Creative, developed with them. So we sat down with them, developed the storyboards, the kind of images and the voiceovers. And again, I'll just show you a very brief snippet of that.
Before I knew it, I was seeing headlines and stories everywhere until I couldn't get this one thought out of my head. Just then, I bumped into this girl who clocked on I was a bit down.
Have you heard about the Young Muslims Advisory Group? YMAG are a group of young Muslims between the age of 16 and 25, and we work with the government to tackle issues facing the Muslim community in the UK.
At the start, I discovered a bit more about YMAG, looked at some of the issues affecting young people, and decided to get involved by taking part in an online poll.
Okay, so just a few case studies, really, and they're just really skating across the surface of this, but what I wanted to demonstrate that these kinds of approaches are actually nowadays relatively straightforward. It's not complex. You need some professional skills, certainly on the animation you need them, but we're doing some work in some local areas now. We're bringing local colleges in to do that kind of work, and the sort of Weimar type example I gave you is certainly achievable in a sort of film college or an arts college, and there's a lot of interest by students to actually do projects which have a kind of social value. So most of you will have a college with some of those skills and resources in your own catchment area. All of these examples have demonstrated how social exclusion can be overcome through digital and creative approaches. They do have a number of things in common. They do give a lot of power and influence to the actual participants. So most importantly, I think they are incredibly tangible. You actually have a product at the end. Most of the work we do ends up in a report which doesn't have much reality for the people participating. This has something which is much more there. It's on the internet, or you can watch it as a film, or you can, you know, see and share it. Clearly, the purpose of this is to create both good engagement, but also authentic and deep insights. And what we found is that actually those tools are incredibly effective in getting frontline staff to actually see, okay, so that's how it works, that's how it looks like from the customers, the members of the community's point of view. I think individually they're not cheap, but they're not expensive either in terms of the volume of use you're getting. The animation on the disability hate crime cost about £4,000. It has been viewed more than 5,000 times, so that's 80p a go. I think that's pretty good value for money. So you're looking at sort of tools and approaches that, if you can embed them in sort of staff development, training, other kinds of initiatives, have got a real contribution to play beyond just the engagement element. So that's all I'm going to say about this. I'm going to have to swivel back into the other role and chastise myself for having run over by a few minutes.